It's Monday, February 28th, 2011, and welcome to episode 117 of Tech Talk for Teachers. I'm Tom Grissom. A short month this month, but an eventful one for the human race nonetheless. More on that later in the show. This month, I had the honor of speaking at the opening session of the Students Involved with Technology Conference held here at Eastern Illinois University. This conference is held yearly in Illinois and also has concurrent conferences in other areas of the state for K-12 students. In the past, this conference was held in the Bloomington Normal area, and this was the first time, to my knowledge, that the event was held here at EIU. The conference is set up by students, for students, and gives K-12 students the opportunity to share their knowledge and skills with one another. We had several volunteer student presenters present on various technology topics, as well as some adult experts presenting on topics such as making music on your computer and a session called Computer Guts, where students could learn more about what makes a computer work. Our School of Continuing Education organized this year's event and did a great job. We had an excellent turnout with over 120 K-12 students participating in this year's event. With a wide range of students, ages ranging from third graders to high schoolers, I presented a talk called We Live in Amazing Times to share some of the history of computing that has occurred in my lifetime and how those trends will continue for the student participants as they grow older and experience their own amazing times ahead as technology evolves and improves in the future. Here is a recorded session from the opening session.
And now for the very first piece of the event today, we have a keynote speaker lined up for you this morning. He's with us here today. The name of his presentation is We Live in Amazing Times, and his name is Dr. Tom Grissom, and I'm going to give you just a little bit of information for you, and then I'm going to turn the floor over to him. Tom is the director of Institutional Technology Center here at EIU. He grew up on a farm in rural Illinois, not too far from EIU, and he's a lifelong learner. He is dedicated his career to improving teaching and learning, and is a strong advocate of using technology, so he's perfect today to learn something new every single day. He received his PhD from Indiana State University in Curriculum and Instruction Design, and he's the creator and producer of Tech Talk for Teachers, which is a podcast about teaching and learning with technology. And you know that if you listen to those, his motto is to keep on learning. So sit back today. Be amazed at the capabilities of new technologies that make it possible for you to learn about and explore any given subject. If you'll help me in welcoming, giving a big round of applause to Dr. Tom Grissom.
Thank you. Thank you very much. What I would like to do to begin with today is just kind of take a look back. I want to do a little bit of history because history kind of tells us where we're going in the future. And as I go through the different slides today, I would like for you to think about some of the first technology that you can remember, and then think about where that might be going as you get to college and as you graduate and get out there into your career of choice. So I thought I would start back with my grandfather's time. And back in the day, when my grandfather was a young man, this was one of the first computers that we had. It was called the UNIVAC. It took up an entire room. So this was developed back in World War II. My grandfather was a vet of World War II, and they used it to calculate artillery calculations. As time progressed, you're going to see a trend here, and you'll continue to see that trend. As time progressed in the 1960s, 1970s, they went from room-sized computers down to computers that would fit inside of a closet. So here's an IBM System 3 computer, very popular computer back in that time. Then something amazing happened. In 1975, there was a group of hobbyists got together, and all of the components and things, you see the glass case there in the top, as the electrical engineers got better and better at making things smaller and smaller, we finally had the first personal computer. And this was 1975. That was one of those amazing times. Shortly after this, a couple of guys by the name of Bill Gates and Paul Allen decided that this needed some software. And they started a little company known as Microsoft. A year later, another couple of guys working in a garage by the name of Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak created Apple Computer. As we went along, the next evolution, there were several generations of personal computers. And then, as I was just beginning my career here at EIU as a student, the IBM personal computer came on the map. And this should look somewhat familiar because we have a monitor. We have the main CPU, the central processing unit there in the middle. So the monitor, the CPU, and a keyboard, not unlike many of the computers that we're used to today. So we have a widescreen monitor, the CPU, and keyboard. So this form factor has been around for a long time. The next evolution, people decided that it would be nice if we could have a computer that could go with us. And thus, the first laptops were developed. I have one that was very similar. The picture shows you one thing, but let me bring this out front here. This is actually the first portable computer out there. This was my first laptop. You set it down, it weighs about 30 pounds. We called them luggables back in the day because you had to lug them around with you. But the idea behind it, once again, was we had the monitor, CPU unit all together here, and then a keyboard unit right here. So that was the laptop. Then we had, got ahead of myself there, after this, more development, more miniaturization. As the engineers were able to make chips smaller and smaller, we ended up with form factors like the tablet PC, the netbook. Thankfully, this is my laptop today. Weighs about 3 pounds, much more affordable. That one back in the day cost around $2,500 to $3,000. These are around $300 today. So much more portable. And now the next revolution is the iPad, the slates, the Android tablets, the Samsung Galaxies. We're going to see a lot of different computers in this form factor. This is amazing, but what's even more amazing is the next generation, which we kind of use the generic title smartphones, but that's really a bit of a misnomer. They're really smart computers. They have all the processing capabilities of that original portable computer back there, and that's just amazing. Which brings us back here, back to my day. The last revolution that's been going on for the last 10 years is something known as cloud computing. So what we're doing is we're taking devices like this and we're connecting them to mainframe computers in large rooms, not unlike back in the day with the first computer. So how many of you have Facebook accounts or have heard of Facebook? YouTube, those types of things, all those are run off servers inside very, very large rooms. So we're using our mobile phones to connect back, which does a couple of things. So what does this mean for you? So we're right at the point for you where I was back in 1975 with Altair, the first personal computer. The smartphone is your amazing moment right now. So what's that going to do for the rest of your career? Things are getting smaller, they're getting lighter, they're getting faster, which means they can do more, and they're getting more connected. The other thing that's going on right now, we're building out our wireless infrastructure. I've grown up in an age of wires. We connect computers to walls with wires. Now everything's going wireless. We still need a lot of wires to make things work, but we're becoming much more portable. We can carry things with us. How many of you know what that is? Picture up there. Do any of your parents have those? So we're starting to move things like books. You all probably still have book bags full of books like this, physical books. We're able to take that, turn it into an electronic document. Because we are connected, I can beam that document off the internet onto a Kindle reader in this case. Anybody want to guess how many books that will handle? Yes.
Over like 3,000.
3,000. Any other guesses?
Over 2,000.
Over 2,000. Yeah, how many? How many? About a million. You may see a million books on this in your lifetime. Right now, what the Amazon is saying is about 1,500 books, 1,500 books will fit on this device. What this does, I can choose a book, press the little enter button here, and then hit next. And every time I press next, it takes me to the next page. I don't know if this computer's still on or not. Let me see if I can log this one on here. This is an application that's connected to the internet called Kindle for the PC. So you don't necessarily have to have a device like this, a separate e-reader. This is a device that I just loaded on a regular Windows computer, and then it's got a touchscreen on it, so I can do the same thing, just turn the pages. The nice thing about taking things electronic is I can zoom in. If my eyes aren't very good, I can make that text much larger, Or if my eyes are good, I can pinch and zoom it back in. And then just page in, page out to all the different things out there. So that's one thing, taking books electronic, which is huge because once we put that on the internet, it can be shared with the world, literally. The next thing, any of you use this service? All right, maybe mom and dad have a subscription to Netflix. Back in my day, and your parents may still do this, do you guys still have the DVDs coming to your house and you mail them in, mail them out? Is anybody using their TV and their internet to download? Okay. So that's another example of where we're taking something that used to be physical, in this case a DVD going through the mail. You can log into an account, and as long as you pay for the information, it's downloaded to you, and you can stream and watch it on your computer or on your TV, in this case. So that's another example. You've all heard of a service called YouTube. YouTube allows you to upload material to it, and I ran across a statistic the other day. For every minute of the day, 35 hours of video was being uploaded, being put onto YouTube. That's just amazing how much material. Just stop and think about that. For every single minute of the day, people all over the earth are uploading 35 hours worth of video content. Now, some of that may be educational, some of that may be personal, but that content is being uploaded and shared with others. Which brings us to an important point. Because we are putting this thing out on the internet, and the internet is public, we need to be careful and safe with what we do on the internet. Before I started doing this talk, I went back and looked at some statistics on my Tech Talk for Teachers. Whenever you put things on the web, you can track it with the number of visitors that come to your site. And I just looked at Illinois. So for the last couple of years, every one of those dots on the state of Illinois represents a listener that has listened to Tech Talk for Teachers. And I expected that. I teach here in Illinois at Eastern Illinois University, so I have a lot of contact with Illinois teachers. When I started this, I did not expect this. There's India on the other side of the world, on the other side of Earth. And what's even more amazing is there's 118 other countries similar to India that have visited Tech Talk for Teachers and at least listened to an episode. So when you put that information on the internet, whether it be a podcast or a blog posting or a Facebook posting, that information's out there for everybody to see. So be careful. And I always tell my students to use the grandma rule, which is I don't want to put anything on the internet that I wouldn't want my grandmother seeing, because it's possible that somebody could see it. This one, this was the big Christmas hit. Anybody have one of these? Anybody have friends that you gotta go over and play with some of these different things? This is another amazing moment for you guys. Up to this point, we've had keyboards and mice. We use the mouse to control the computer. Now then, we're using our entire body. Our entire body becomes the controller. For those of you that haven't played it, this is a racing game, isn't it? Racing cars there. So they're holding their arms out. What are they doing? Pretending like they're steering their cars like this, and there's a device on the TV that's reading all of their movements. So that's a new way to interact with a computer. And it's really fun to play all of these games, but let me see if I can jump out here. There are new, just like Bill Gates started programming that Altair computer, people have to program these computers. And one of the things that they're doing, people are figuring out how to use that motion interface to turn it into a controller. Anybody play Mario games? Here's a guy playing Mario using his body, his entire body. I'll just play about a minute of this. It's using the Kinect system. This is a mirror showing him right here. Got to get him turning the other way. So you can see him running here. So there's his little character. He needs to jump again to jump over that. Okay. So that gets you just some examples of what you can do with Mario using your entire body. So not only can you do that, but I think there's going to be a couple sessions on robotics. This opens up an entire new avenue of programming for robots and things, because you can suddenly start programming, when I raise my hand, have that robot arm move their hand. Whenever I grip, have that robot grip. So we're controlling things with a completely different interface than we've been able to do, which is just amazing. Now, you also live in a generation where you're able to make things with computers. Back when I was about your age, these things were just starting to be programmed and invented. One of the things that I like to do is create, like, my Tech Talk for Teachers podcast. I can't just use any song that I buy off the internet, because it's illegal for me to use that because of something called copyright. So I create my own music. So let me jump over here, see if I can get this computer on. Wake this one up. Anybody in the band play musical instruments? I'm going to have my computer be my instrument. Okay, I've got a keyboard. You've probably seen these. Some of you may have these. This is a keyboard I'm going to turn on. And when I turn it on, it's going to connect to my computer through this cable. It's a USB cable. So I'm going to turn that on. Then I'm going to open up my musical software. In this case, it's a program called Mixcraft. So I essentially have like a whole orchestra that I can use my computer to play. It's going to ask me, what do I want to do? I'm going to say build loop music, because this has loop sounds that it's listened to and programmed. I'm going to come out here, and let me lose this one. Down here I have a library of different sounds. So let's just listen to one of these. You hear that in the back? All right. So now I'm going to experiment. That's a bass line, a bass guitar. So let's listen to this one. All right, let's listen to some drums here. All right, so I've got some beats and things. All that music goes together. Which one of these did you like better? This one? Or this one? Which one? What, first or second one? All right, so I'm going to throw my drums. I'm going to drag this up to one of my tracks, and here's my drums. I'm going to stretch this out for a few measures for those of you in band. And then you said you wanted the first bass. So I'm going to drag my bass. I'm going to let my drums come in. So my drums are going to start playing first here, and then my bass is going to come in. So let's take a listen from the beginning. I could add a piano. So let me stop right there. My bass ran out, or my drums ran out, so if I want to start a piano, I can drag my piano up here. And let's listen from right here forward. So very quickly, you can layer the music just like in a band and create your own composition, then save it out as an MP3 file, like you listen to on your iPod or your Zune or your other MP3 players, and you can load those MP3 files on your own on your iPod and listen to music that you created or your friends created. That's how powerful the computers have become. I've got all kinds of different genres, different styles of music, so I can go down through here. That was a blues, got country, got disco, and you just kind of go through there and play around, pick your different instruments, different styles, or let me start a new project. Let me just go up here and say file, new, just like you do with a word processor. And would I like to save these changes? No. Let's do a virtual instrument. So now I'm going to arm this and start recording. So if I set everything up right. So you can see that it played those notes as I was recording it. Stop this. Let's go back and play. Because now I've turned it into a digital composition, I can do things that I can't with a physical instrument. So let's say I don't want a piano anymore. Let's see if we can turn this into a different instrument. And let's go down and let's turn it into strings. And let's turn it into a violin and say, okay. And now let's play it back. so I turned it into strings. Just all by doing that. So if you know how to play the piano, you can make your own musical composition. Which kind of brings us back to here, where we're going in the future. Phones are connected. Last year, for the first time, mobile phones outpaced selling of personal computers. So I happen to have an Android phone. And let me see if I can turn this on, if you guys can see this. A lot of the things that I saw growing up on science fiction, like Star Trek and Star Wars, they're becoming true today. And the things that you see in your science fiction movies that you watch, they'll come true for you. There is a new application that came out in the last month. So I downloaded an app to my Android phone, and it's called Translate. This is what they call a universal translator. If you watch Star Trek, I've always wondered how Captain Kirk could talk to all the aliens because he didn't understand their language. They use something called a translator. They've invented something that will take something I speak in English and turn it into German or French. So let me see if I can do this real quick. My name is Tom Grissom. Okay, so right there, that's Spanish. It translated my English into Spanish. Let's see if I can plug this in and listen to it back in Spanish, if I can find my, plug this in so you can hear. So that's Spanish. If I want to, I just go up to the menu and change it from Spanish and change it into German.
My name is Tom Grissom.
Change it into French. All right, so that was French. So you literally have capability with a mobile phone you're carrying with you all the time, wirelessly connected, to do all of these amazing things. So with that, I'll go ahead and wrap it up. Let me go back to my PowerPoint, see if you have any questions. And thank you very much for attending today, and I hope to see a few of you back here in a few years at our university. So thank you very much.
All right, that was the talk I gave at the SIT conference held on Saturday, February 12, 2011, here on the campus of Eastern Illinois University. It was interesting talking to some of the students throughout the day about their understanding of technology and where they think it is going in the future. First, I had to come to grips with the fact that we now have elementary students in school that were born in the 21st century and will never have any firsthand experience at all with 20th century technology and culture. As we teach, we must reach into the future world our students will live in, but also provide a solid background of fundamental concepts and enduring truths. The students did get a kick out of the 30-pound laptop that I demonstrated, but could not believe that such a device ever existed or that people would actually use one. I had a conversation with one of the students who observed that the Kindle e-book reader I demonstrated used less energy to turn the page due to the e-ink technology that the Kindle uses. We need to encourage such thinking and curiosity, as we need a lot more green energy development in the future to make devices as power efficient as possible. Several of the students were interested in how to make computer music, and the conference had a session just for that. Many of the students were interested in the Microsoft Kinect and expressed an interest in finding ways to use it, including computer gaming and new uses not yet invented. There were sessions on robotics, Facebook privacy, technology and TV news, social networking safety, flash animation, and many more. I remember the days of elementary and middle school where I would take things apart just to see how they worked. The challenge was always putting it back together so it would work again. This deconstruction and reconstruction is necessary to learn more about the way things work. Our students today need the opportunities like this to learn in a safe and constructive environment where the hands-on/minds-on experience of making things is encouraged. Whether it be computer projects like creating computer-generated music, drawing cartoons using flash animation, or producing their own TV shows, project-based learning activities are fun and the learning lasts over time. These types of projects and opportunities are where children make quantum leaps in their knowledge and understanding. It was a fun day and everyone learned something new. As a follow-up to the Amazing Times talk I gave at the conference, I want to mention IBM Watson this month. The Watson Jeopardy! Show aired the week after I gave my presentation to the students, but I hope that teachers across the nation took some time this month to discuss this amazing mile marker in the evolution of technology. The IBM computer called Watson, named after IBM's first president, Thomas Watson, matched the abilities of two of the smartest humans in the world in a game of Jeopardy. Ken Jennings, the 74-time undefeated champion of Jeopardy, and Brad Reuter. Watson won the game with a total of $77,147 to Ken Jennings' $24,000 and Brad Reuter's $21,600 over a two-day period. It was really quite an impressive feat. I have provided a link in the show notes to the PBS NewsHour article, complete with a series of videos about the behind-the-scenes story of IBM Watson and how scientists are working on the next generation of artificial intelligence. Here's a question for you after reviewing the videos. Do you call Watson a he or an it? My technology pick of the week this week is a new smartphone app that I mentioned in the SIT keynote presentation called Google Translate. I really do believe that smartphones that are coming out on the market today mark a similar point in history as the Altair and the first personal computers in the 1970s did for my generation. Smartphones are evolving very rapidly and are now being paired with cloud computing services that make the mobile devices as powerful as the mainframe computers of not so long ago. In fact, they are increasingly being connected to mainframe-type computers by high-speed wireless connections to take advantage of massive amounts of computing power that was previously impossible for the average person to access. All of this computing power is now in a cell phone-sized device that many of our students carry around with them all the time. I have provided links in the show notes to the Google blog that discusses Google Translate program, as well as a YouTube video of a Google Translate demonstration. In the YouTube video, you will see an example where a person that speaks English wants to buy a pair of shoes in Germany. The English speaker says that they want to buy a pair of shoes, and then the Google Translate app that is now available on Android translates the English sentence into German. That's pretty cool, but in the next part of the video, the German storekeeper speaks into the Android phone in German, and it is translated from German into English so that the English speaker can understand his answer. Translate supports 53 languages, from Afrikaans to Yiddish, and voice input is currently available for 15 languages, with more sure to come in the future. Yes, Translate does make mistakes from time to time, just like IBM's Watson, but this really is absolutely amazing technology. We are getting closer to the universal translator that was used on so many episodes of Star Trek that I watched while growing up. Science fiction is becoming a reality. That wraps it up for episode 117 of Tech Talk for Teachers. Show notes for this episode and archived episodes are available on the web at the EIU Instructional Technology Center website at eiu.edu/ITC. To leave a comment or suggestion, please send an email to techtalk@eiu.edu or leave a comment on the Tech Talk for Teachers blog. Until next time, this is Tom Grissom. Keep on learning.